I'm Chad Parkman with Parkman Farms in Lavergne, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
This is one of the best Texas wheat crops we've had in a long time, but the condition of the crop is declining slightly. We'll have more on that coming up to kick off today's show.
The outlook for herd rebuilding in the Texas High Plains is a little unclear right now. I'm James Hunt, and coming up on Texas Ag Today, we'll bring you some insights from one of the region's top beef cattle experts.
If Congress wants to pass a new farm bill this year, members say it must be bipartisan. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. This is one of the best wheat crops we've had in many years here in Texas, but the condition of the crop is declining slightly. Scott Strawn is the AgriLife County agent for Ochiltree County. He says the wheat in his county is getting thirsty.
It needs a drink. When you look at the 100-year rainfall average, the month of March is close to 2 inches, and the month of April is close to 2 inches. And I would say since March, we've gotten maybe 10% of that 4-inch average. And so we've had a great year. And of course, several months ago, we talked about this possibility of this dry pattern coming in. And it's beginning to take a toll on the dry land wheat. It's not too late. If we could get some moisture this week, we're still going to cut a crop. But it's beginning to knock the top off this big yields. We're beginning to adjust our yield estimates as we go.
The latest Texas crop progress and condition report shows a slight decline in wheat conditions. The good to excellent ratings now stand at 46%. That's down a couple of points from 48% a week ago. The poor to very poor category now stands at 21%. That's up a couple of points from a week ago. South Texas citrus is under attack, and USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is asking residents for their help.
Texas citrus in the lower Rio Grande Valley is at risk of being infested by invasive and damaging fruit flies. APHIS and the Texas Department of Agriculture are inspecting and surveying fruit trees in residential yards and commercial properties to check for signs of invasive plant pests and to protect the food supply and agricultural economy. Residents can help by cooperating with surveys and taking steps to keep invasive fruit flies off their backyard fruit. The main threat this season is an invasive fruit fly that is native to Mexico and Central America. While the fruit fly is harmless to people and pets, it feeds on more than 40 different kinds of fruits and vegetables. Invasive fruit fly larvae can infest homegrown fruit, mature into adult flies, and then fly into commercial areas and spoil new harvests. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Applications are now open for the American Sheep Industry Association's annual Sheep Heritage Foundation Scholarship. The deadline to apply is May 31st, and the recipient will be announced this summer. The $3,000 scholarship will be awarded to one graduate-level student who's attending school in the United States. For more information, go to sheepusa.org. The outlook for herd rebuilding in the Texas High Plains is unclear for now. James Hunt visits with one of the area's top beef cattle experts about it.
So how much herd rebuilding will we see in the Texas High Plains this year? Texas A&M AgriLife beef cattle specialist Jason Smith says that's a tough question because even though forage conditions look encouraging in many locations, there's some apprehension among producers about the cost of females.
Whether those be replacement heifers, bred cows, cow-calf pairs, whatever form you may purchase that replacement female in, there is concern of overspending, with the understanding that as a whole, those females are currently probably somewhat undervalued in the bred market. But the reality that over time, if we find ourselves in another upcoming drought in the not too distant future, that could be still an expensive decision to have made.
And the potential for another drought, Dr. Smith says, is reason to proceed cautiously with rebuilding. Now that's talking about the Texas High Plains as a whole. Here's his assessment on those portions of the panhandle that were hit by the massive wildfires a couple months ago.
Given the situation, forage recovery has been quite good. At least the appearance is such that there was enough moisture in the ground and enough moisture has been received for a quick green up and starting to grow some grass in those pastures. The challenge with that is it's going to take a substantial amount of time for those pastures to reestablish themselves to what they were prior to being burned. And so in many of those situations, ranches are not looking at being able to return to a normal stocking rate without some substantial supplementation and hay feeding for the better part of 1 to 2 years or more.
I visited with Jason Smith of AgriLife at the recent Hemp Hill County Beef Conference in Canadian. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
If Congress wants to pass a new farm bill this year, members say it must be bipartisan. Jessica Domel has the story.
As we await the release of a draft text of the Farm Bill, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle continue to emphasize the need for the food and farm legislation to be truly bipartisan. In a recent editorial, House Agriculture Committee ranking member David Scott wrote that when crafted properly, a Farm Bill offers something that can appeal to any member of Congress. He said it helps farmers grow the crops that supply America and the world. And it provides critical assistance to help America's most vulnerable citizens feed themselves when hit by hard times. The ranking member said it also promotes the nation's agricultural exports, conservation practices for healthy soil, research to enhance America's agricultural production, and more. He went on to say that for this farm bill, House Republicans are abandoning bipartisanship to follow the same partisan ideological strategy that led to the failures of farm bills on the House floor in 2014 and 2018. The ranking member accused House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson of planning cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which Scott opposes. Scott said Ag Committee Democrats want a bipartisan farm bill that invests in critical farm safety net programs without cutting SNAP funding or prohibiting the Secretary of Agriculture's discretionary authority to use funds from the Commodity Credit Corporation. Although we've not yet seen a draft of the Farm Bill, House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson told Texas farmers and ranchers last week he expects the draft bill to be marked up in the committee by Memorial Day. At that same meeting with Texans in Washington, D.C., Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett of Texas, who is also on the House Ag Committee, said the Farm Bill has to be bipartisan coming out of the House.
We need cooler heads to prevail. Both parties need to stay at the negotiating table until we can get to something that we can all live with. Because I'll be honest with y'all, if we don't have a bipartisan farm bill, we don't have a farm bill. That is why it is important that we don't let the cart get out in front of the horse. If we end up with a partisan markup in the Ag Committee, this is not a cause for celebration, even if it looks like one. Because what would come out of the partisan markup would not be the farm bill. It would be dead on arrival. And I don't mean dead on arrival in the Senate. I mean it won't even pass the House. If it isn't bipartisan, you can't pass it on suspension because you need two-thirds of the House. And we all know that there are certain members on both sides of the aisle that always vote against the farm bill no matter what. So you can only pass it under a rule by a majority vote in the Rules Committee. But if you haven't noticed, we aren't very good at passing rules this year. We've had a record number of rules that have failed. On just about every major bill on the committee, you have a 6-6 vote to start out and one swing vote. But here's the rub. The member who is always the swing vote has never once voted in favor of the farm bill, not even a partisan one. So we have got to make sure that we pass a bipartisan farm bill out of committee. Because if we are able to get a bipartisan farm bill, there is a whole lot that everyone can be excited about.
The nation is currently operating under a one-year extension of the 2018 Farm Bill. Crockett said hopping from extension to extension is untenable, and people need the certainty a Farm Bill can bring. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Highly pathogenic avian influenza was found in Texas dairy cattle back in late March. Dr. Bob Judd has the latest update from the Texas Animal Health Commission on the situation.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Broadcasting from a padded room in the basement of the Texas Farm Bureau World Headquarters, here's Carrie Martin with more Texas Ag Today.
We mentioned earlier that the condition of the Texas wheat crop is declining. Tom Nicoletti digs deeper into that subject as he visits with a panhandle farmer.
My guest today is Jared Blankenship. He is a farmer and rancher in Hereford, where he raises winter wheat, runs cattle, hay. Later on, he'll be planting corn and grain sorghum. But for right now, Jared, tell us your situation with your wheat crop, how it's faring right now here in the month of April.
Our wheat crop is a mixed bag. Moisture was limited early on. Planting emergence was very delayed. A month and a half ago, we really didn't expect we'd have any dryland wheat at all. We've had a limited amount of moisture. We got about 1.3 inches in my immediate neighborhood and toward Hereford, 2 inches a week or so ago, and it's greened things up. Overall assessment, dryland wheat is probably not going to do much. Probably going to be some insurance claims on dryland wheat, but there is some irrigated wheat that looks pretty good. Personally, we've got several circles that we've been able to stay ahead of and keep in decent shape, and they will actually be laid down for hay probably in about 2 to 3 weeks for the hay market. Very limited grazing of wheat this year in the panhandle. There was some acreage that was flat sacrificed for livestock. Our cow herd has been on milo and corn stalks from last year. We're just finishing up that. Moving cattle, moving them off stalks. We're kind of in that no man's land of we haven't fully greened up on grass, but we've got to go somewhere. So we're kicking onto grass right now and supplementing and waiting for that next rain to kind of green things up a little bit more as we move into spring and summer.
That is Jared Blankenship. He is a third-generation farmer and rancher in the Texas Panhandle. I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
Highly pathogenic avian influenza was found in Texas dairy cattle in late March. Dr. Bob Judd has the latest update on the situation.
The Texas Animal Health Commission released an update on highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPAI, in dairy cattle. The first cases in Texas were diagnosed in late March, and as of April 17, there have been 11 dairy cattle premises identified with infected cattle. The virus appears to amplify readily in mammary tissue, but there are no changes in the virus that would allow it to infect people, but it is still a major concern in poultry. Transmission of the virus is still being studied, but it appears the virus is transmitted from cow to cow by mechanical transmission, especially through milk. To decrease transmission of the virus, the United States Department of Agriculture recommends limiting movement of animals, upholding good biosecurity practices, and testing animals before necessary movements. The USDA believes wild migratory birds are the original source of the virus, and the virus found in dairy cattle is the H5N1 strain, which is the same clade that has been affecting wild birds and poultry in the United States. State and federal animal health commissions are working diligently to collect and share epidemiological information. It is clear the virus is in high concentrations in milk, So humans and other objects that come in contact with any milk should use caution and wear disposable gloves and clean any milk off of objects to prevent spread to other cattle or other farms. Avoid housing multiple species of animals together to avoid transmission. And always use good milking practices, including disinfection of equipment, and milk the sick cattle last.
I'm Dr. Bob Judd, and this is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Friday. Cattle futures ending on a positive note, higher close in both live and feeder cattle. April live cattle up 72 cents, closing at 184.67. The June up 77 at 178.57, while August live cattle were up 72, closing the week at 176.77. Bigger gains in feeder cattle. May feeders up 245 at 248.70. August up 225, 260.55, with September feeder cattle up 215, 261.57. Cash fed cattle sales wrapping up the week at steady money here in the Southern Plains. Most of our cattle selling this week at 182, same as we saw last week. However, here at the end of the week, we did see some sales in Kansas as high as 184. In the north, live sales range from 184 to 186, with a few as high as 187 reported out of Iowa. Dressed cattle in the Midwest this week selling at 294. That's $2 higher compared to the previous week. Boxed beef prices were mixed. Choice up $1.50, $298.42. Select down $1.19 at $288.47. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
My guest today is Henry Pickett, Abilene Livestock. Sales every Tuesday. Henry, how was your last sale?
Oh, it turned out pretty good. We had another few days of some good moisture in the area. We still ended up with 680 total cattle with about 160 cows. We had some really nice cattle this week. We had a couple of guaranteed young bulls, Black Angus. They were twos coming threes. They bring over $3,000. They went back country. And then we had some really nice young pairs. They bring anywhere from $2,000 to $3,100. And then the Packer cow and bull deal was off just a little bit, but still high yielding cattle were still bringing good money. We had some Packer bulls bringing that 158 and some high yielding cows bringing a 140. We had some really nice wean yearlings yesterday. We had some 750 pounders bring a 230, and we had some 725 pound steers bring 240. 860 weight cattle bring 215. Then we had some little light steers weighed about 400 bring 3 1/4. Good. So it was pretty good. The good cattle are still bringing good money, and the plainer cattle are kind of holding on, but they're slowly losing a little bit of ground.
Do you know of anything for next week's sale?
We've got one ranch sending in about 80 head of calves away from 4 to 5. They're pretty good quality, and then we're waiting on some words from a couple others.
Well, tell everybody how to get a hold of you.
Here at the barn, we can be reached at 325-673-7865, or my cell number is 940-733-8208. And we're starting to put together a young female cow and bull replacement sale, going to be held in conjunction with our regular sale on Tuesday, May 14th, but we'll start taking calls any day now and consignments.
Neighbor, looks like that's it for today's edition of Walking the Pens. Thanks so much for listening to us on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. I'm your host, Larry Marble. Good day to you.
Thanks, Larry. Back over to the futures market now, where lean hogs finished lower. May hogs dropped a dollar to close at 94.27. The June contract down 252, 102.47. Class 3 milk closed lower. April milk down a penny, 15.52 a hundredweight. May milk down 18 at an even $18 a hundred. Cotton traded in a mostly sideways pattern. We wrapped up the week with July down 18 points, 80.90 cents. October down 24 at 78.32. December cotton down 33 points, 77.31. Corn remains locked in the same sideways pattern we've seen for the last 6 weeks or so. It seems like the Brazilian corn crop is topping the news right now. Traders continuing to watch it. The Brazil Safrina crop now getting into the dry season and facing some above normal temperatures for the week ahead. In Argentina, 20% of their corn crop has been harvested. 60% of that harvest rated fair to excellent. May corn down a penny, finishing the week at $4.40 a bushel. July down two at $4.50, with September corn down 2 3/4, $4.59 a bushel. It was a stellar week in the wheat market, hard wheat especially seeing nice gains throughout the week. In fact, the July Kansas City contract up over 71 cents for the week. It all started last week when news broke that wheat stocks in India had fallen to 16-year lows. Also, dry weather concerns across eastern Ukraine and southwestern Russia. Then on Monday, USDA announcing that 50% of our wheat crop is rated good to excellent. That's a lot better than last year. However, it's 5 points lower than just a week ago. So all of that combining over the past week to send Kansas City wheat sharply higher. On Friday, we ended with May wheat up 14 1/4, 6.46 1/4. July up 13 3/4, 6.54 1/4. Soft wheat only saw modest gains. May Chicago wheat up a penny, 6.03 1/4, with July up 1 3/4, 6.22 1/4. In the energy markets, May natural gas was down a penny at $1.61. June, West Texas crude oil up 11, $83.68 a barrel. The financial markets were higher. The Dow up 153 points, 38,239. The NASDAQ up 316 at 15,927. The S&P up 51 at 5,099. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A. Texas Agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.